I'm Marco Werman with The World. It's a monthly fact of life for pretty much every woman on Earth and for a significant part of their lives. And yet menstruation is something that just talking about it makes a lot of people uncomfortable, especially men. But in some places around the world, it's more consequential than just creating awkward moments.
I was reading an article about girls in South Africa who weren't able to go to school because they couldn't manage their periods in school. And this made me so angry.
That's Anna Dahlqvist, a Swedish journalist who writes about sexual politics. A few years ago, I heard pretty much the same thing from girls in Nairobi, Kenya. Dahlqvist has a new book out called It's Only Blood. She spoke with my colleague Carol Hills about it as part of our Across Women's Lives project.
Around the world, there are millions and millions of menstruators that don't have the material resources that you need to manage your menstruation, like menstrual products or toilets, access to water, to soap, or just to privacy. And if you combine that also with the shame and silence connected to periods all over the world, that means that everyday life becomes very, very difficult for a lot of people in the world just because they're bleeding. And it means that it becomes difficult to go to school, becomes difficult to go to work. It affects your health when it comes to like infections and many other parts of life, like making your own choices and moving around freely.
Give me a few examples of what countries you found this in.
Well, I was looking at Africa, south of Sahara, and in South Asia, because I was looking at the parts of the world where most of the people that live in poverty can be found. And I went to Uganda and Kenya, to India and to Bangladesh to interview women and girls describing their experiences.
Give me an example of, say, somewhere you went in South Asia and the particular community and how girls dealt with their periods.
Well, when I interviewed some teenagers in Karnataka, which is in southern India, it was outside Bangalore, and there's one like a big menstrual rule in India, which is that you're not allowed to enter Hindu temples while you're on your period. And I met this 13-year-old girl, and she was telling me about, you know, she was going on a field trip with a group of friends. They were going away for several days, and she knew she was going to get her period during that field trip. And she wasn't allowed to come if she was having her period. So what she did was that she'd heard that if you buy a papaya and if you eat a papaya, that might like provoke your period. So she'll have her period before this field trip. So she went and she bought a papaya. She ate it all. It didn't work. So she had to stay home. And this might sound like a small thing, but it's not. It is a big thing. It means that she was left out from something that she should have the right to do. These girls also told me that when they had their first periods, they were not allowed to go outside their homes around 2 weeks. They were not allowed to sleep on their regular beds. They weren't allowed to eat on the same chinas as they would usually do. And in parts of India and Nepal, on the countryside, women are actually forced to sleep in menstrual huts during their periods. And these menstrual huts are usually they lack all sort of comfort. There's no electricity, there's no heating, they're very small. And people, women have actually died in these huts because they've tried to heat them up and suffocated to death. As well as there are known cases of sexual violence when girls or women have slept there by themselves.
What are the interventions one can do without treading into kind of interfering in social practices or traditions?
Well, I think that it's important to see that, okay, this is actually connected to human rights. And I also think that we need to look at it as something that exists everywhere. It's not like a special cultural practice. The idea of shaming and separating and silence and secrecy around periods is universal. It's a global thing. It's not something that is specific for certain cultures. It's also happening in Sweden, where I live, or in the United States, where you live, or somewhere in UK.
Give us an example of those.
I think that we live with rules that we might not think about that much, but we're supposed to keep our menstrual products hidden. We're not supposed to show our tampons and pads. We keep it in a bag or in a pocket. And we're not supposed to talk about it, especially not with men, not a part of a public discussion. And I think, especially when you're a teenager, people making fun of periods, mocking, And ideas that periods is something that is dirty. This is also reinforced in media, in ads, when you sell commercial products. The message is buy this to stay clean and fresh, as opposed to being dirty and not fresh. So, and this has an effect on the way we look at our bodies and this perfectly normal bodily function that is menstruation. And it also means that we haven't had public conversation around periods. That means that we haven't been able to talk about complications like menstrual cramps, endometriosis, heavy bleeding. And if we don't talk about these things, we cannot demand changes like better healthcare, better research, better menstrual products that are not too expensive that everyone can access.
It seems like kind of normalizing discussions about menstruation and periods, it's sort of having a moment with Meghan Markle, the new Duchess of Sussex, involved, and she and Harry giving money to organizations that are trying to break down taboos and provide tampons and napkins and other things. I mean, do you agree that we're kind of moving forward on this topic?
Yes, there is a menstrual awakening, one could say. And we've seen this global menstrual movement taking place around the world with a lot of activism and NGOs working on the issue and media becoming interested in it. And now what we have to do is to keep focusing on it so it doesn't become something that's just, okay, we're having our menstrual revolution, we're talking about periods, and then it's over, because this is something that we have to keep on talking about.
What is working in terms of this kind of menstrual movement in terms of awareness?
What is working is if you take a holistic view, you have to talk about it. It's education, it's breaking stigma and breaking silence. And if you don't do that, it doesn't help to give out pads or to build a menstrual-friendly toilet. It has to be part of a package.
I'm just curious, the refugee crisis of the past several years, I remember looking at, you know, TV screens and seeing these thousands and thousands of people. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, I hope those women have tampons. I mean, I thought something that somebody might not think about. Did that spark any discussion at the time?
That's a discussion that also have come up in the global menstrual movement. We have to look at this group of people in this specific situation. And the UN bodies and the NGOs realize that this is something that we have not been looking at. And it actually means that women in refugee camps cannot move around. They cannot go outside to stand in line to get food, for example, because they don't have any menstrual protection. So they're not going to want to do that. They might like stain and bleed and be exposed to bleeding. So they cannot access water or food because they are isolated.
Anna Dahlqvist is a Swedish journalist. Her new book is A Global Look at Menstruation. Her book is called It's Only Blood. Thank you so much, Anna.
Thank you.